Welcome to Show and Tell. I'm Al Weger.
Hi, I'm Jean.
And we are a couple from Eagan, Minnesota. Our histories go back quite a ways. I'm an American Lutheran Church pastor. I spent 12 years in the parish, followed by 6 years at Wilmer State Hospital, working primarily with chemically dependent people and gradually moving into the mental illness realm. And for the last 9 years, Jane and I have been at Weger Woods, which is a individual group and family treatment center just outside of St. Paul, Minnesota. In addition to the treatment center, we've established a school that we'll be talking more about on Saturday. The topic for today is positive imagery and health. That should be common knowledge to most of us because we learned in Sunday school that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. But maybe we didn't take it all that seriously. And during the last few years, we've become much, much more aware as to the what we've experienced is that this has some great effects, not only in surface illnesses, but in some of those illnesses which seem to be terminal, hard to control, and in some cases, apparently out of our control. I guess basic is the question, who are you? You answer that affirmatively? Who are you? And I'd suggest that each of you turn to the person next to you and say your name, and that you're a wonderful and important person, and tell them how come you're here. What did you feel when you told somebody else that you were a wonderful and important person?
Scared.
Because?
I wasn't sure I believed it.
What?
Because I wasn't sure I believed it.
Oh! Did any of you get any special messages?
I believe that I'm a wonderful person because that's the way God made me.
Okay. There's a positive side.
It made me feel good.
You felt good. Okay.
I feel opinionated. So. Oh.
Okay.
I think and make opinions and that's it.
You want to rise to those expectations?
I was told that if I said anything like that, I'd break my arm patting myself on my back. And that I should be, what was the term?
Humble.
Ah, you know what humble means?
Not exactly.
Humble means a true judgment or evaluation of who you are. Doesn't mean being puffed up, and it doesn't mean being cut down. And actually, we've turned that word around so that when we're humble, we feel kind of like worms, huh? And we can get a very negative opinion of ourselves very quickly. In answer to the question, who are you? I am a living soul. Not that I have a soul, I am a soul. And who does God love? My being. Who does he relate to? My being. A again, that doesn't have much room for worm or crawling in the dirt. It means that I am a wonderful and special person. In fact, what was the pattern? I was created in God's image. And what are some of the characteristics of God? He is creative. He is alive. He is living. He moves out. He's involved. He doesn't shrink back, but makes decisions and acts on them. And our world is the way it is because he spoke. Well, pretty positive. Now, what sets us apart from the rest of creation? Our creativity. Have you seen any of the animals around here build a building like this? This is quite a different building than any I've ever seen before. I looked at it and I take pictures of it in my mind's eye, and how can I do something like this back in Minnesota? Got all the materials there, it's a matter of putting it together. We not only create, but we can copy and we can recreate. You see a muskrat nest, and you know it's a muskrat nest. That's instinctive. There aren't very many variations to it. How come then we are so limited? My suggestion is that because of faulty cultural conditioning, those are three big words, huh? Faulty cultural conditioning that has suggested that we are less than the image of God, less than capable of creating, less than having the attributes that God built in from the very beginning. And Jean, would you like to talk about what stress and this faulty cultural conditioning does to us?
I'm not used to being tied to a microphone. What Al and I are attempting to give you in this hour is what we normally cover in a 1 day or a day and a half long workshop. So what I would suggest to everybody that you do is take a good deep breath right now, because we're going to break all the rules around good teaching and just kind of barrel on through and give you as much information as quickly as we can and have you do some experimenting with it too. We also decided that if anyone wants to stay later after 5 o'clock and ask questions.
I made an agreement that we would stop at 5, eat dinner, and come back for the healing session at 6.
Okay.
And that we'd be around
later.
All next
okay.
week.
Good. Okay. I'm going to ask each of you to stand up for just a minute and get a partner. Will you do that? Just stand up for a minute. Get a partner.
I already
got one. All right. Well, you decide who's number one and who's number two, or who's A and who's B, or what's going on? Okay. Face each other. Will you face each other? Just going to do a quick experiment. All right, those of you that are number ones or A's, whichever way you went, will you hold out one arm like that, straight out the side?
Okay.
All right, now, will the other person push down on on your partner's arm, just see how much energy it takes to push it down. You don't, that's right, resist them as best you can, and you push down. See how hard. Okay, now, what I want you to do is, those of you with your arm out, keep your arm out, okay? The other person, just take your hand and run down about an inch and a half or 2 inches from the person's body, just like I just did with Al.
One of the theories about why people started shaking hands was one theory is that there was to avoid letting anybody else get too close to your energy field. We all are basically electrical conductors, and we have within us then that power to both use that for our own well-being and to extend it to others. And some of you have been involved in touch healing. That's allowing that energy of the universe to flow through us and to extend to others. What we're talking about then is how we make use of the energy that we have that not only exists within us, but that we exists so much that if we actually project it out from us even. How we make use of that in dealing with the stresses that we get involved with every day. Most people, a few people, I've walked around here now for these days just in almost wonder and awe at how beautifully the children are cared for. And some people learn from the time they are tiny, long before they're old enough to talk, how to handle stress in ways that allow this energy field that surrounds us and that we are a part of and that we project out from us to be used in an ongoing creative way. For most of us, however, long before we're old enough to talk, we learn one of three methods of dealing with stress. We either learn that when stress gets great enough, and this is, how many here have had children, cared for infants? All right, do you remember that babies could always tell if there's extra stress in the house? I don't know if you were like me, but I remember one of the things I learned real early was that on the day a baby's baptized, they're always going to be fussy. Well, that's because everybody else is excited and under stress. All right, that kind of learning that takes place that isn't verbal, that is pre-verbal or non-verbal, is by far the most powerful. And most of us learn that either you go with when stress gets bad enough, you do one of three things. You go inside your head, and we call that psychosis, neurosis, nervous breakdowns, hypertension, aggravation, any number of terms. Another group of us learn that when stress gets bad enough, you go outside your body. This is supported by our environment. We call that coffee and aspirin and Nidol and alcohol and marijuana and Valium and any under-the-counter, cross-the-counter, or prescription drug that we use as a mood changer. Now, lots of times we'll use coffee and alcohol and others not as a mood changer, but when we say, boy, I was so uptight that I had to, da-da-da-da-da, then we're using it as a mood changer and dealing with stress in that way. A third group of us learn that when stress gets bad enough, we go inside our bodies. I'll bet there are more people here besides me that knew as a kid how to make the thermometer go up on spelling word days. Anybody else? I did. I knew just how to not have to be in school on certain days. And so after we grow up, we call that migraines and hay fever and asthma and ulcers and cancer and head colds. And that's in no way to belie the germ theory or any other theory, because what I'm talking about is then with stress, we allow our bodies
natural rejuvenating processes to be slowed down, to be eliminated. In other words, our own power to use this electrical energy that is a part of us, this creative being that God has made us, to, instead of being used for us, be used in a way that is no longer healing. I believe firmly that our subconscious always works in our best behalf, but not always in our best interest. And the analogy that makes some sense in my head is, if you've ever watched a two-year-old come and ask to help, you know, like help set the table, and they want to help, and you give them the dishes, and they drop the dishes on the floor, or they spill the milk, they're working in the desire to produce well, and they don't have the skills, and so something goes wrong, and it gets to be more of a problem than it was before. I think sometimes, you see, because as we get older and more sophisticated, if we have only those three ways of dealing with stress, then we start mixing and matching, and we get a hodgepodge that may be our subconscious wanting to use that creative energy that we have, because the thrust is always toward health, but not having the skills with which to do it, and therefore it works against us rather than for us. Am I making some sense to you? Okay. So part of what we're talking about here today then is how you can acquire the additional tools to begin to turn that around, to begin to get things back to functioning the way it was intended to be in the beginning. And that's where I experienced the using visual imagery and combining it with what, in my experience, is a prayer-like form, but what I call a guided meditation, as a way of turning back on that creative energy and making it be a force that works for us. Okay, do you want to say
something? Yeah. Several years ago, Dr. Symington, who was a radiologist in Texas, noticed that some of his cancer patients got well and others didn't. And he did some research, and he discovered that those that got well were those that were feisty, those that were very invested in staying alive, and not only cooperated with the radiotherapy and the chemotherapy and the other things, but literally fought their way back to health. And he checked with those that died, and he discovered that many of them gave up before they came into treatment. They didn't have anything to live for. And then he did some interviewing with them, and he discovered that many of the people who didn't survive saw cancer as an enemy. They saw cancer as the end of the road. There was nothing more to live for. And why not just give up? And he asked them to draw pictures and to describe, how do you see cancer? And invariably, the cancer was something that overwhelmed them. And they were without any power, and they were victims of the situation. Very little positive thought there, is there? Very little of the I am created in the image of God bit. And so he checked with some of the people that were getting well and having remissions, and they had imagery also. And for some of them, their white blood cells were like knights in shining armor, and they went out and speared the cancer cells and killed them, and had other thoughts that seemed to be very powerful and very productive. He went further And he started checking with all of his patients, and before long he decided it's important that anyone who comes here for treatment give me at least 8 reasons why they should have the cancer. And the immediate reaction was, I don't want the cancer. But the interesting thing was that with doing a little introspection, everyone had reasons for having the cancer. If I have cancer, nothing more is expected of me. If I have cancer, I won't have to go to the relatives for Christmas. If I have cancer, I can get out of this or out of the other thing. And ultimately, if I have cancer, they'll carry me away. There's some advantages. And as long as the advantages of being ill overweigh the advantages for being sick, guess what? Or for being well, we're not going to put much energy into being well. And again, we get back to, how do you see yourself? Are you worth being around? Or should you do yourself in? With ulcers, cardiac problems, lower back pain? Your choice. I remember one time, I didn't get up in the morning. My back was so painful that I just rolled out of bed and crawled to the bathroom. And on the way back from the bathroom, I called my doctor and he checked me out and made the observation that obviously I hadn't hurt my back physically, so I was under a great deal of nervous tension. And he said that he would prescribe some muscle relaxants and that in 3 days I should be able to get back to work again. And I said, muscle relaxant? He says, yeah, there's nothing wrong with you, Al. It's just that you're uptight. I didn't bother moving any further. I just lay down on the floor next to the phone after I hung the phone up. Did 10 minutes of conscious relaxation. By that time, Jean had my breakfast on the table and I went to work.
Now, we're talking about then things that are both dealing with tension in its primary state and dealing with tension in its secondary state. In other words, when the body's own immune system has been shut down to the point where you may be dealing with head colds or flu or any number of other illnesses, and whether that's arthritis or cancer or whatever it might be. And we're not suggesting that you use meditation and imagery and eliminate other methods of good medical practices, but rather that you see this as a part of, that you look at new ways of dealing with stress. I'll tell you a story about the White Knight. When I first started studying with the Simontons, I thought White Knight was wonderful. I had this magnificent White Knight who came out, and I was working with a fibroid cyst in my wrist at the time and also a bad head cold. And I had this magnificent White Knight, and he came out, and every time I meditated, he'd come out, and that was just great, and all he did was ride around and show off, and that was like so much hooey, you know, so much for that business, I got nowhere. So then I thought, well, maybe if I get a whole bunch of White Knights, that would be a good idea. So I tried a whole bunch of White Knights. Well, that was slightly better in that they came out and jousted about. They got nowhere, and then one day, I noticed in my meditation, my imagination, that I could see this big puff of dust somewhere down the way. And I waited, and eventually it showed up. It was a magnificent bunch of garbage trucks. Whole bunch of white garbage trucks. They began to do something. So today I still have my garbage people who come and collect all the germs when I come down with a cold or whatever it is, and they seem to do a pretty good job, much better than the white knights. What I'm talking about is if you can image your body's own healing system in some metaphor other than a medical one. We've all seen medical books. We've all seen what white blood cells are supposed to look like. And we've all seen what germs look like or bacteria look like or drawings of them. But if you will translate that into a metaphor, into something that allows your fantasy, your imagination to get going, and combine that with relaxation, you have then got the triggering mechanism to reinitiate the creative energies and turn that electrical power that you all got in touch with a short time ago, turn it back on to be used for you. But it seems to take those two steps. And with it, I see the allowing yourself to be in touch with that universal power, that power of Christ, that is the great healer and the ultimate power that we call on. So that when we talk about doing a guided imagery or a guided meditation, I use the following steps, and I'm going to just briefly outline them and suggest to you that while I'm doing that, would you think about some fantasy, some imaginative image that you can use for the healing energies within you. Maybe you want to use white knights. Maybe you want to use my garbage people. I don't know. I don't know anybody else who has garbage trucks running around inside them, but that's been effective for me. Each of you will come up with something that is right for you. And what you come up with today, initially, may not be the final one. You may come up with something different, or it may change for you. Anyway, I'd invite you, during the next few minutes, while I outline these steps, while I'm talking, you can pay attention to what I'm saying, but would you also think a little bit, because then we're going to do a short meditation and give you a chance to practice. Okay. The first step is to find a comfortable place for you to be, where you can be uninterrupted from between 5 and 20 minutes. I find that my most effective meditation takes me about 20 minutes, and I try to find a time at least once a day to do that. If I'm working with somebody who's working with a life-threatening or life-debilitating illness, I suggest to them that they need to meditate a minimum of 3 times a day, and that at least 2 of those need to be what I call long meditations, at least 20 minutes. The third one can be much shorter, and you'll find that the subconscious really doesn't pay attention to the clock, and that you can do some things very quickly that otherwise would take longer. But wherever it is, you want to find a safe place, a good place, and once you're there, find the most comfortable way for your body to be in which you will not fall asleep. In other words, if the most comfortable place to be is lying down, but you're going to fall asleep once you lie down, don't lie down. Find a comfortable way to sit. If your body is in pain, get enough support for it. Don't get into a position that you're going to be distracted by the discomfort in your body. Because the next thing is you want to relax. Okay. Once you have found a comfortable place and you have consciously allowed yourself to relax, and at first you're going to need to train yourself to relax. We're trained to be under tension.
were trained to be alert. And you're going, learning to relax is really that. It takes training. And as you do it, you're going to find that you will do it more and more quickly until you can have a word or a position or something that will suggest to your subconscious that you're going to relax now, and you'll be able to do it almost instantly. All right, then what you want to do is go to a place of your own in your imagination. Now that can be a real place that you've been to many times. It can be a place that you create that would be an ideal place. It can be some combination of the two. I come from Minnesota, and my place is always the front lawn. They say the way you can identify a Minnesotan is that they always have a cabin on the lake. We have the cabin on the lake. It's always a different cabin. It's always a different lake. So I go to our cabin on our lake in my imagination each time in my meditation, and it's always a beautiful, warm July afternoon, and there are never any black flies. Now, you know that in Minnesota, that is a fantasy. So that is a place I have made up. See, for me, then, it's a combination of a place that is very familiar and very special to me, and a place and a fantasy. All right. Third step is, once you can imagine that you're there, that you can, with your mind's eye, see your body resting there, you fantasize that you can go inside your body in a new way. And you call your healing energies to you. Whatever shape your particular metaphor takes. And you begin to travel through your body, ridding it of any diseased shape, and you see the disease as a metaphor. So maybe you see them as squiggly worms or something that you want to get rid of. And you see your body's healing energy cleaning that out and ridding yourself of that. And then the tissue returning to normal, to health. And so that you actually see it healthy. And I always suggest to people that they start with the healthy parts, the parts of their body that they're not aware of, thinking that it needs something right now. And then having gotten your whole body in shape to go out and really fight this battle, you go to the parts that are diseased, the parts that are dis-ease. And you take care of cleansing, healing, and seeing if, for instance, if you're dealing with bacteria or you're dealing with cancer cells, not only how are you going to get rid of them, destroy them, but then how are you going to get them out of the body, get rid of them, and how the new healthy cells are going to take the place. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. When you have finished that task, go back outside, see your body resting again, relax. If there are muscles, if there are parts that have become tense, let them relax more. See your body relax completely. And as you do, look into the distance. And one of two things you can deal with. Sometimes there are guides. Sometimes the energy is you can call upon the energy of Christ if you choose. I was raised by a mother that believed in guardian angels, so I have a lot of that kind of belief that however you see your connection to universal divine Christ energy, this might be the time
to experience that kind of communication in prayer. That sharing and that knowing that which we are comes from Christ, and calling upon God's energy at that point, and however that would personify itself for you. The other thing that I encourage people to do at this point is also to communicate with the illness. If you have pain, if you have any kind of illness, allow yourself to see that illness personified in some way that it can communicate with you. Because if you think back to what I said about how if our subconscious always is working for us, but doesn't always know how to do it, then we need to find out what purpose this illness has had in coming into our lives. The analogy that I think of sometimes is our bodies sometimes are like a nation that decides to go to war, that decides that their homeland is being threatened. And so people go off to war. They're willing to risk their being maimed or killed in order that what is important to them is preserved. And just as nations, if we don't find a better way to do that, we're going to destroy ourselves. So as individuals, sometimes if we don't find a better way, we end up being destroyed. When somebody comes to me with cancer, I will tell them, find out what the cancer is all about. Find out the reason that it came into your life at this particular time, or an accident, or whatever it might be. Because you need to know what that's about, and not discount it even before you're going to be able to let it go. So the dialogue then with the God power and or the illness. And then finally, the last step is that to see yourself accomplishing, celebrating the accomplishment of some goal that you're only now setting. Some goal that, and once you've set a goal, then you stay with it till it's accomplished. But if you don't have a reason to be healthy and you don't have a reason to live, then you're not going to get healthy and you're not going to live a very productive life. That we all need some reason, some purpose, and so the goal. And that's it. And then you come back and go about your daily work and do whatever you need to do and celebrate. That's basically the outline. I hesitate to. We've got just time to talk through a meditation, and I'm going to go ahead and do that. And I was starting to say I hesitate to do it without asking people if there are questions. I realize I'm realizing that we've just put a lot of information just like that, and that's really unfair to you. Are you comfortable if we go ahead now with the meditation? All right. Find the most comfortable way you can be then, and I'll talk you through it. You may find that you've already shut your eyes, Or it may be that you're not sure just whether you're going to shut your eyes and open them again and shut them again. However you find that you can most relax. Perhaps the easiest way is to allow your awareness to move through the room with your eyes closed. Being aware, perhaps, of the sounds of people moving about, the music, the chair as it pushes against your back, or the floor under your feet. And as you get aware of each thing, notice that it's safe and comfortable, and then let that awareness go. And bring your awareness to your body. There are muscles that are tense. It may be the small muscles that attach the scalp to the skull. Maybe those muscles we use so much to hold our heads upright and sustain our bodies. Perhaps it's the muscles in your legs. Wherever it happens to be, allow them to relax, knowing that there's always a deeper level of relaxation. And that each time we do this, we can relax more and be more and more comfortable. And finally, draw your awareness to the very rhythms of your body. Perhaps already you're breathing a little deeper. Perhaps you're breathing a little quieter or slower. Maybe that already you're noticing that your heart can beat just a little slower, because our subconscious knows so many things that our conscious mind isn't aware of, and knows when our bodies can actually begin to slow down and be quiet, to be still and know that I am God, and allow that knowledge to pass through us. A quiet time. That you can allow your imagination, that God-given gift of creativity, to be aware of the chair as it rests upon the carpet on the floor going down into the earth, down through the topsoil, the subsoil. The foundation reaches still further down to the very core of the earth and draws up from there the energy. And that you could imagine that from the very top of your head, that energy field that we became aware of draws down the energy of God, the universal energy from the heavens, coming down and entering into our bodies so that your body can now relax fully, more and more completely. And in this very comfortable state, you can let yourself go to that favorite place, wherever it might be, a place where you can relax still more. It may be a place that you've been to so many times that you know exactly what the sounds are, the smell. Perhaps it's a place that you're only now creating within your imagination. And you're paying attention to how the ground feels beneath your feet.
You can pay attention to the sounds about you. A special place. A place where you can see your body resting so comfortably. And as you do, you can find a way to go inside. Perhaps in that narrow space between your eyes, perhaps some other place, you would find a special way to enter your body and call to you your body's own healing energies. I don't know what shape they take for you, but you do, and you can call them to you. And even as you call them to you, you can increase them in number and in strength. And then, together with your body's healing energies, begin to move through your body, starting first at those places that you know are strong and healthy, and enhancing them, empowering them even more. Go to those places that you don't often think of. Maybe the inside of an elbow. That spot deep within your ear. A place at the base of your skull. Or the toes that exist so far from the heart center. Minister onto each one, and then when you're ready, taking all the time you need, and knowing that we can stretch time or collapse it as we need, that in a minute we can easily do 8 hours of work within our own minds. Go now to those parts of your body that need special ministry. Parts that may need particular healing. Your body's healing energies are now practiced. They are now skilled. See them ridding your body of each and every deterrent, and the cells returning to full and natural health. And then when you're ready, go back out and see your body resting, restored. And as you claim this body that you see resting here, look into the distance, maybe across a body of water, maybe some other space. And if there are special energies, guides, guardian angels, whatever way you would see this, the Christ energy itself, himself, that at this time you would dialogue, knowing that we are taught to ask, and it will be given, to knock, and it will be opened. This is a time also to call forth the image of the illness, whatever form or shape it might take, to dialogue with the illness and learn what its purpose is in your life. Perhaps there are no images that come to you at this time, and you use it as a quiet time for contemplation. Perhaps later, at another time, the images will be there.
however it is for you is the right way, with no need to push or force, but allowing your own connection with the universal healing to guide you. And then, again, when you're ready, go back out, and as you reconnect with your body resting, see yourself accomplishing some goal that you've only now begun working with. In perfect health, celebrating that accomplishment someday in the future. And then, with that sense of celebration, feeling your body fully centered and grounded, feel all the body processes returning to normal, fully energized, ready to do those things you choose to do with the remainder of the day. Counting from 5 to 1, come back to this room and this time, fully alert, fully conscious, and ready to go about doing your choice of tasks. 5, 4, 3, 2, and all the way back, 1.